All right, I have to say this is the trifecta of Star Trek adventures when it comes to riffing, even though today we're going to be having a really, really, really fun session. Before we get into it, I'm Michael Dismuke. I am a freelance writer for Star Trek Adventures RPG, lead writer on Captain's Log, and of course, one of the many skilled bloggers on Continuing Missions, which is the ultimate fan site for Star Trek Adventures. If you have something that you wrote for Star Trek Adventures, send it to us. We love to post it. We love your content. And of course, this show is not a show without the amazing Jim Johnson.
Hey everybody, Jim Johnson. I'm the project manager and line editor for the Star Trek Adventures RPG and the Captain's Log solo RPG, both published by Modiphius Entertainment. Very happy to be the co-host on this here show with Michael, though, these many years, 2 years
and
now.
Before you go any further, I'm going to acknowledge something for the first time, Jim, that I've never acknowledged before. Ready?
Yeah.
I always notice that if you're all are watching YouTube, that Jim changes his name to say Jim Johnson. I've seen it every time, and I never say it because I always think I'm interrupting, but today I'm interrupting just to say I acknowledge the work you put into the details like that. Go ahead. Sorry.
I am detail-oriented. There are details in all the books that people still have not caught yet, so it's the devil's in the details, folks. All right. Yeah. Thanks for noticing. Appreciate it, as always. Anyway, so 220 episodes strong, 2 years plus, having fun. And super excited to have a regular guest back on our show tonight. Al Spader, please tell us all about yourself, sir.
How's it going, everyone? Al Spader here. I'm a freelance writer for Star Trek Adventures and the lead writer for the Federation Klingon War tactical campaign. I'm also a writer and designer of some other stuff, Sentience 2D20 being front and foremost on that.
And of course, his biggest achievement of today is his amazing shirt. And again, for all of you who are only listening to the podcast, I pity you because I asked him to send me the link where he got this Wrath of Khan shirt. I need it. I want it. I need it in medium athletic.
I love it.
Please make sure I get that.
That's awesome.
All right. So here is what we're talking about today. And it's perfect that three of us are here. We are talking about Star Trek Adventures, the role-playing game. We are talking about Captain's Log, the solo RPG. And we are talking about the next evolution of Star Trek Adventures, which is the Federation Klingon Tactical War Campaign, which Al Spader is the lead writer on. And we're posing a challenge to everybody, which I think we've solved, and you'll see it through various postings and episodes and live plays and stuff like that, of how you integrate all three of these dynamic systems to make the ultimate Star Trek experience. Is it possible, Jim?
You bet it is. Of course it is. We designed it that way, right? We were intentional about all three of the, well, not three, all three of these books, because STA is much bigger than one book. But when we were designing Captain's Log and we were designing the Federation Klingon War Tactical Campaign, those two books, if you can believe it, they were both in development for so long that they overlapped in some cases. And Captain's Log was, you know, came out earlier, but while we were finalizing Captain's Log, we were still working on the tactical campaign. And so we were able to pull in cross synergies and cross pollinations and all kinds of great stuff. So, I mean, clearly the DNA of the three of us are in all these books, right? But yeah. Absolutely. They're totally compatible with each other, along with every other freaking book in the line that we've done over the last 7 years. It's all compatible. And in fact, even, you know, sneak peek, looking ahead to second edition, all of this largely compatible with second edition too. So you're like, it's win-win, right?
Yeah.
Before we go too far though, quick non sequitur. Today is a very special day, obviously, right? Because we're recording this on Monday night. And I got my contributor copy of Federation Klingon War today.
I did too.
Mail. So for me, you would think this isn't a big deal because I got the print proof, a couple months ago, and I did a little unboxing video for that. But it's always the is it that noise? Is that me or is that something else? Hang on, you know what? That might be me. Darn it! Did it go away?
Was that your stomach growling?
That was my stupid microphone. Hopefully, it won't happen again. My apologies. Anyway, so It's always when I get the comp copy that I know that a project has come to an end. It has been completely locked down, finished, and over with. So I know that the copies are getting out there into the world. People have pre-ordered it. People who are ordering it now are getting it. It's working its way into distribution. They'll go into retail here. But today was a special day because it was like I've actually got my comp copy in hand now. And I know other people have gotten it. And now I can finally put that entire gigantic project that Al took us 2.5 years to fully realize is now done. And I'm so happy that it's done. But now we get to have fun, right? Now we're gonna take Michael Dismuke's lead writer, magnum opus, Captain's Log. And we're going to take Al Spader's lead writer, magnum opus, the Federation Klingon War Tactical Campaign. And we're going to combine them.
Yeah. So I think it's right that we start at the top. And what I mean by top is top of the galaxy. You can see the Milky Way galaxy spinning. And if we go down to the Star Trek universe, I think we first land on the Federation Klingon War Campaign. Right? What's moving on in the galaxy? I think then we go down where Jim's the expert, Star Trek Adventures, those mission modules. And then finally, we zoom in even more into that captain's chair to captain's log. So I think what we're going to do is first let each of us talk about that, like what the purpose of each one of those levels of Star Trek are. And then we talk about some ideas about how you as a game master or a solo RPGer or a gaming group can mix and match to give everybody what they want. Whether you're one day you have a weekend alone where nobody shows up to your game and you can pick up Captain's Log, or whether you have a bunch of new players at a convention. For instance, myself, I'm going to be running the Federation. I'm going to be running Al's game, the Federation Klingon War, at a convention for a bunch of newbies to kind of give them the feel of galactic politics. So we want to do that for you all today, is to show you the scope that you can play. So Al, why don't we start with you? Give us a premise. I know we've been talking about the Federation Klingon War for weeks, but let's pretend like someone's walking in for the first time and this is their very first time watching continuing conversations. What scope is this? What can they play when they pick up this book for the first time?
So I think one of the discussions that Nathan and I had a while back revolved around role-playing scales, right? And there's a one-to-one scale between a person and a character. And Star Trek Adventures has always had a larger scale type role play by, you know, taking your position on a ship and telling the ship what to do, right? The ship is a slightly larger scale than your one-to-one relationship with your character, right? So what the tactical campaign overlay does is it zooms out to an even larger scale than that, right? It gives you something else to role play. And that is the sense of being an admiral or someone that makes decisions about a war effort from a galactic scale, right? We're talking about people that are commanding fleets of ships instead of just a single ship. The way that we decided to do this was to create a board game-like element where you push your assets around the galaxy to deal with hotspots that are bubbling up. So really, it's just another scale of role-playing that you have while you do Star Trek Adventures.
Yeah, it's almost like a risk, for lack of a better comparison, I'm going to go with one of the most popular games when it comes to world level stuff, and that's Risk. Either you have your armies, you're rolling, you're building and stuff like that. Some people may have played Civilization, which is an amazing game. You know, it's kind of that level, wouldn't you say, Al?
Yeah. So the other two comparisons, people that are familiar with the RPG space but not so familiar with the campaign overlay, Blades in the Dark, Band of Blades is a role-playing game. That's a Forge of the Dark system that has a strategy phase. You run your missions, you do your jobs, and then you come back and you look at the strategy phase. And then Pathfinder's Kingmaker is very similar as well, in that you do a little adventure in this part of your kingdom, and then you come back and you manage your kingdom and whatnot. So it's this sense of scale that we really haven't done before, especially not in Star Trek Adventures, in a Modiphius line. So we were pretty excited to have that opportunity. And Ivan Sorensen, who is great at procedurally generated stuff, put together this skeleton of the campaign overlay. And then I was able to play test it and go through and Star Trekify it.
For a couple more comparisons, because I really want to get people to introduce into the game, especially if they play comparative games, would you say, like for Modiphius Dune, which is a little scaled back, you play year by year, season by season, would you say that that's a pretty good comparison too?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of Dune is told from the perspective of a house. So you have your little character relationships that you can do, but then you also have a house management system as well that is a scaled back version. Dune is a little bit different in that its assets you actually can have on your character or are related to your character, whereas this is more like a board game that fits in between the different story beats of the actual campaign.
Good. And then Jim, offline, because of course we are always talking even when we're not recording, how would you compare this to like Pendragon? You had been talking to me about a game called Pendragon. Would you compare Federation Klingon War to that level also?
Yeah, to some extent. I think Pendragon, you know, the whole gist of that is it's a generational game. But the way it's structured is you have the summer phase, which is when you're doing your adventuring and you have like the main module that you're doing or the adventure that you're doing or whatever. And then you go into the winter phase, which is where you're managing your manor, you're managing your knights, you're managing your squires, you're managing your property. Things are happening. There's some tables that you roll on. Like, did you have a good harvest? Did you have a bad harvest? Is there a famine? Are there weird shenanigans happening that maybe you have like a little side quest that happens during the winter that may or may not influence what happens to you next summer, right? So I can see where there's some similarities where in the Federation tactical game, right, you do an RPG mission and then you go do the tactical campaign component that influences your next mission. And then there's just a synergy between the two as you continue to work your way through the war. So some similarities, although I think Pendragon is a different scale because every adventure and winter phase is a year, right? So it sounds like it's more like Dune in that respect. Whereas with the Federation Klingon War tactical campaign, it could be a week, it could be a month, it could be a couple days in between, right? You can really play with that timeline.
Yeah, see, I playing the Federation Klingon War campaign, I kind of, because there's so much going on, I actually view them as seasons or years. I really do when it comes to that level. Or maybe, you know, because of the scale of Star Trek and what we saw in Discovery, maybe it's a month. These things happen within a month. But I like strategy games to that level where you're not rushing through. This happened in a day. And I feel like Federation's Klingon War is more that larger strategy game. Wouldn't you say, Al?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely the strategic layer of managing these hotspots, right? And you can tell little stories at each of those hotspots as well, but we'll probably get more into that a little bit later. One thing I did want to point out is, you know, there is still a story that's being told that you and your ship go through while this tactical overlay is in play. And you can play the two of them together, or you could just do the role-playing bit, or you could just do the tactical overlay bit. There's a lot of flexibility there. And, you know, one of the reasons why we called this the tactical campaign book is, you know, because it's a little bit different than a campaign guide, right? It's not just everything you need to run a campaign, but it's also this additional system that you can use with the Klingon War, or you can take it and mess with it just a little bit and use it with any war.
Yeah, and speaking to the flexibility, Al, I'd love it if you talked briefly about this. Like the way it's designed, or the way it's set up in the book right now, is you got your three war phases, right? You got early war, mid war, late war, and each phase has a certain number of turns arounds, right? I don't remember which exact terminology we decided to go with, but you can add more phases if you wanted to. You could do fewer phases. You could make the each phase longer or shorter depending on the war. So like if you wanted to do like you know, the Dominion War, add a couple more phases, you know, do a like you know, early year one, mid year one, end year one, and you know, add more to that. Like, how would that scale? Would scaling it up or down impact any of the numbers, do you think?
Yeah, one of the things that, and really think about the amount of time between your scripted events when you are deciding what stages there are and how many turns there are going to be within each stage. So I often, I've been talking with people over the last couple of weeks about, you know, going to the Dominion War. And I'm like, well, there's really a lot of stuff that happened before the war. So you could have a stage that is pre-war. Then once it kicks off, You do, you know, your early war, mid-war, late war, and then you could even do post-war stuff too, right? That, like, you know, maybe there isn't a ton of canon on, but something that you could try to mold as well. And just think about the major events that happen, like obviously the evacuation of Deep Space Nine. That's probably going to end your early war stage. And then it's not a lot of time before they come back to Deep Space Nine. So maybe that mid-war stage only has two turns. Maybe the complication range is quite a lot, and there's a lot of points of interest being activated each turn, but maybe there's not too many turns, right? So really consider the length of time that you see, you know, in your shows, or the time that you want to give. But absolutely, add as many stages as you want, add as many turns per stage you want. And if your players are loving it, adapt it along the way, right? Give them more if they want more.
I would love it, Al, if for continuing missions, you post a sample phase for the Dominion War. Like, I love that you said maybe the first phase has five turns. Maybe the second phase only has two turns. Maybe the last phase has four turns. But the you know, maybe the POIs are increased. I would love if you just do that simple model, because I'm still waiting for someone to offer up all 20 new ships and 20 new. We're going to get to it eventually, but I want people to really not get stuck on that you have to play Discovery Era on this, because I know I'm currently adapting it, and they let people know, for our game. So my players who are watching this, I'm going through and collecting all the characters that could be considered assets that you ran into for the last 5 years. I'm going through and running all the ships that might be in our area of space. And I'm going through and thinking about all the different resources that you've come across through time, through technology, and trying to create random tables of 20 on that. And then, of course, the complications that go with that, you know, escalation. So I'm currently building my list of 20s so that when we finally get to our tactical campaign in our sixth or seventh season of our game, that we're rolling and playing your level of galactic intrigue.
I actually just read something today from Michael Freeman, where he was saying, well, if you're doing the the Dominion War, maybe your asset tables even change for each turn or each stage of the war, right?
Yeah.
Because we saw a lot of different people coming to help or leaving, or, like, you know, maybe the Romulans come in during stage three as potential assets. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, maybe the Klingons, like, yeah, like, that, I was like, oh my gosh, like a new asset
time
each stage would be like spectacular.
Oh my God, Jim, you're probably thinking the same thing. Imagine
I've been waiting to jump in, but no, I had this thought the other day when I was thinking about the Shackleton Expanse, and like, how could I use the tactical campaign with the Shackleton Expanse? And it dawned on me, all we're talking about are those three D20 tables, right? We're talking the resources, the assets, and the ships, right? There is no reason you couldn't do those three tables from a Klingon perspective, or a Romulan perspective, or a Paklit perspective, and play the entire tactical campaign in whatever era you want, from a completely different civilization. It doesn't have to be Federation, right? You're going to run it. You're going to play a Klingon tactical campaign. You're going to play a Romulan. You're going to play a Bajoran. I don't know. Maybe you want to do a Cardassian one with the Badlands being the focus, the focal point of it, or something. Okay. And then for the Shackleton Expanse, you know, you could do the Vinshari or any of those other species that we introduced in it, and just go crazy with it. That just shows you the flexibility of this thing.
I got to go more then, Jay. Push it. If we're talking about this truly, what if each phase, and mind you, if we're playing a Department of Temporal Investigations phase, what if each phase is a different time period that would introduce the different tables depending on where you're at? Yep. Oh my goodness, that would be amazing. Jumping through Star Trek's best periods and rolling on that table for it and running the temporal war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make the Guardian of Forever a asset.
Oh my goodness.
Or a resource, I guess.
Make the Iconian gates an asset.
Mm-hmm.
What's the ones that start with T? The other ones. Anyways, you get my point. Q could be an asset at this level when you're in the DTI, right? So, oh my goodness, we have to do this
the Elorians. I mean, there's no shortage of stuff in canon that you can pull in.
Even the characters, like imagine going back in time. What's the episode where Kirk met the woman, Elizabeth Taylor's character? That episode,
City on the Edge of Forever.
Imagine if she was an asset, a character asset.
Edith Keeler, yeah, for sure.
I'm falling in love. Oh, or what? Sorry, one last one. I'll shut up. What about from Star Trek Voyage Home, the doctor who came through time, the
Jillian Taylor.
Yeah, what if Jillian Taylor was an asset in there?
Well, how about Giorgio? How about Emperor Giorgio?
Oh, heck yeah. All day long.
You know, Giorgio and Jillian Taylor teaming up together to go on some mission to resolve some sort of situation.
Okay, what about from the IDW year? No, sorry, the animated series, the guy who flies, who was running the table, the alien, the Aurelian.
Score, I think.
Yeah, Score. What is Score, who knew about a character asset.
But then you were talking about the year five, right? I mean, why not bring in Gary Seven and Isis as assets?
Okay, everyone, you get
why
the
not? Well, we could riff on this all night, man.
Right.
This is the ultimate Star Trek timelines war, right? Because you can do literally anything. Like every single this ties into the STA is how STA ties in. Every single mission brief that we've ever published for the game, every single adventure, if you're doing a temporal war tactical campaign, you can fold everything in if you wanted to. I know there's some people out there who like to run every single episode, every single adventure we've run and every mission brief we've run in some sort of sequential order. It's like, well, you know, do a temporal war tactical campaign, bring everything in and run the entirety of Star Trek Adventures for however long it takes you to do that.
The one thing that I would add to that, Jim, is if you are planning on doing that, make sure that you have a success criteria and a failure criteria for that mission.
Everything.
And have the potential to either gain a progression point or a momentum or, you know, something like that.
Right.
If the characters do everything that they're supposed to do, right, to keep in line with everything that you already presented.
You guys are talking ultimate game design. This is really what we're talking about is making everything relevant. And so I just want everyone who's, you know, listening or watching this, because this is the top level we're talking. We're talking about building not just a game session, but a campaign that shows it's world building at its ultimate. It's universe building at its ultimate level. Al, when you're talking about, I hate almost calling it the Federation Klingon War tactical campaign, because really the book is a tactical campaign book. It just happens that this one focuses on that one skirmish, right? But I want people to realize that this is higher level that can be adapted to your greater story, no matter where you are in the universe and time and era, right? Cool. Okay. So you have this world building level, and then Jim, now we want to bring it to the Star Trek Adventures level. For people, if this is the first time that they're ever hearing about Star Trek Adventures, what does that game look like? It's not as huge as the tactical campaign. What is it? What's the setting?
Are you talking about like just the role playing part of it with the different adventures and mission briefs and stuff?
Yeah, with the group, you got 2 to 7 players, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so it's like any traditional RPG where you've got a group of friends around the table, whether it's a virtual table or a real physical tabletop, and you're creating characters in whatever method you want to create your characters. You could be playing pre-gens if you want, or you can do creation and play, or you can do life path. Like there's a few different ways of creating characters, and you start doing individual missions. Right here, you know, we're using this book in particular. You can start at the beginning, do the scripted event, and then jump right into the first mission. You can play them sequentially, or you can play them a little bit out of order if you want. The final episode in the book ties in stuff that happens in all the other ones, so that it would kind of make logical sense to run it last, but you don't have to. You could play with it a little bit, but I think virtually every adventure that we've published for the game to date, in all of our different books and standalones and everything else, can be adapted to the disco era, if you stick in the disco era, or you can change it to any time frame that you want. All the mission briefs, I mean, we've got, 350 mission briefs at this point across the line. I mean, there's no shortage of story for you people. So, you know, do that. And so then you're off and running, you know, so you've got this tactical overlay that you could play or could not play, depending on your group's tastes. But then you do the traditional RPG kind of venue where you got your game master and you got your players, and you're going through episodes and adventures as you would session to session, scene by scene, doing the RPG thing. And
can we give people a vision? I want to give people a vision again. We're talking about melding all three levels. So, Jim, suppose I'm in the tactical campaign and I have all this fleet movement and stuff like this. How do I zoom down to the what I'm calling the Star Trek Adventures level of a ship and the crew?
Well, I think there's a couple ways you could do it. You could do the tactical campaign and have like that bit of it influence what happens in your mission, like whatever mission you choose to run. Like there could be, maybe you have some momentum bonus or you have some asset bonuses or something like that, that will help inform your adventure. Or you can do kind of what we did in that one time we kind of played through it is kind of like play through a round or turn of the tactical campaign and see what kind of stories percolate from that. Like we had a couple of characters in a ship go do some mission, and our first bit, we decided not to send any resources to go save the starbase, right? And that starbase got blown up right out the gate, right? And we were like, oh shit, what are we gonna do with this?
Exactly.
And we managed to do really well with a lot of the other missions or the other tasks that we had in front of us. But that starbase blowing up was a big deal. That was, you're talking 10,000 people just getting blown away right off the bat. Is there an adventure that we can build around that? And instead of doing one of the pre-written adventures, we just create a new adventure and play through that and see what happens. And then the results of that would inform our next turn in the tactical campaign. Was that what you were shooting for?
Yeah, and I by the time this airs, we would have played two rounds of the tactical campaign. Yeah. We would have had that blown up space station, plus we had a ship that was stolen. And what we decided to do by the time this comes out is take it into solo. So we kind of skip over the Star Trek Adventures group overlay. And if people want to go back and watch it, you could see how we took it straight to solo campaign, collaborative solo play between me and Jim playing people. But to your point, that's what I wanted you to make a point of, is you take that tactical event, and then from there you choose a mission module to fit in there to highlight a crew's activities, and then if they succeed or fail in that mission, it affects the tactical event. Correct.
Right.
And how about this? How about if that tactical event or whatever happens and things went badly, you have maybe a character on the ship's family member is there, or their friend is there, right? And they start getting the news that way. And this is where we start talking about, character development and potentially even the trauma system. So have those events actually be discussed on your ship as you're role playing.
I love it. In fact, if I had to play this or give a comparison to what character we saw experience all three levels, I'm going to go to Strange New Worlds in Mbenga, where you had the flashback episode, which is tactical campaign, right? People are moving and certain things happen in that war. And then you have the mission level where the story, the kingdom, where he's the Elysium kingdom, where his crew are affected kind of about, this is a little fantasy mission. And then you also go down that personal captain's log level where he's discoursing with his daughter. Like, you see all three levels of Star Trek Adventures with Mbenga's story, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's nothing stopping a game master from loading up their D20 tables with NPCs that are tied to the characters, right? Or to planets that are tied to characters. Like if one of your player characters has an important NPC or an important location that's important to them, I'm being redundant, put those in the table. Maybe you end up with a mission that impacts their home world, or maybe their daughter, is on a star base that's now being attacked by the Klingons or whatever your adversary is, and that's going to influence your tactical campaign on a whole new level, because it's not just sending resources to go solve a mission. Now you've actually got personal stakes wrapped up in it, because the game master was wily enough to actually put those NPCs and locations into the tables, the random tables, and hey, random chance, things happen during war, right? In fact, this it'd be a great way also to tie in NPC allies. Like if your captain character is buddy buddy with another captain, put that captain's ship in the ship table. And oh, look at that! The USS Resolute is in trouble. What, do you go rescue him? That's your buddy. That's your bestie from the academy days. What are you going to do? So now it's more real, right? It's not just a kind of generic starship that's out there. It's your buddy that you just had two episodes with and had a whole bunch of adventures with now. And you just ratchet up the stakes.
Epic idea.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that in the tactical campaign, there are rules for rescue missions, right? Just because you lose a character or you lose a ship on, when you're rolling on the loss table, you can, as a GM, see that and say, all right, maybe not the next mission we do, but the one after that, I'm going to give them an opportunity to find this person, this asset that went missing, being held in some Klingon prison camp, right? And give them a chance to rescue that character.
Absolutely. Michael, who was on that starbase and what happened? Now we got to the things that happened in the Satsuko campaign are going to inform our next episode, because instead of us doing the next pre-written adventure, we got to go on a rescue mission now. Now
Styles got abducted. Was it Styles? No, it was Admiral Herbert. Who got abducted in ours?
Oh, I don't remember.
I'll have to go back and look.
Somebody, though.
Yeah, we'll go back and look. But that's the point. So I want people to think about that if you're going to go tactical campaign, but bring it down to what I'm again calling Star Trek Adventures group level. Look at those modules and adapt them for the greater campaign. I've been playing tactical campaign as a solo campaign, mind you, for the purpose of getting it ready for my players. So I can through randomization say this is what's happening on a galactic scale, and now this is the problem you have to deal which could affect or detriment the next mission. So those mission modules are just brilliant. I hope one day I get to sit with all of you sitting around an admiral's table, pushing pieces around and ships and stuff like that at the tactical level. And then stop and say, let's go play this mission and see how this turns out on this ship. Right. Mm-hmm. Would that be the dream?
Even go to the next level, Michael, make it like a weekend long retreat where we gather for the tactical level thing. And then we gather for the RPG thing. And then our homework for that evening is to take our character, we'll go back to our hotel rooms or whatever, and we'll do a captain's log of our character reacting to what was happening. And then we come back the next day and we share our stories back and forth. And then we can go to the next tactical thing and then so on and so forth. So I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can scale up and down. Just to riff briefly, there's actually another layer that you could drop in here. So you got the big level tactical, and then you got Star Trek Adventures group play as senior staff. And then you could go to the next level, have a group of lower decks characters, junior officers doing stuff.
That would be hilarious.
Directly related to everything. And then you've got your captain's log below it. So you got four layers of stuff here that you can scale up or down and just go all over the place with it.
Yeah, Jim, that actually was something that I was thinking about with merging all the three levels together too, was you play out your round of your mission, and then you start the tactical campaign, you assign your assets, and then the homework for everyone is, instead of actually rolling at each of the points of the interest, they create the captain's log for each point of interest and then come back the next week and share it out, and then you rectify the round.
I love that. So let's segue to captain's log now, because this is interesting, because captain's log can become epic too. It can be universe changing, some of the stories. And some of the things that me and Jim have been playing around with is containing the captain's log with certain rules from the beginning. Say, for instance, we're going to say, hey, you know what? We want this episode to happen completely on a ship. So if we get a dice roll that throws us weird off the ship, no, we're going to re-roll. We're going to remake that dice roll to keep it on the ship. We also say, for instance, for those of you who've watched us play Captain's Log, that this one's going to be drama heavy. No matter what we roll, we're going to try to contain it to family issues. So if all of a sudden, for instance, you get Rogue Comet, you're rolling a family issue, Rogue Comet, it's like, okay, well, instead, a real bad case of hemorrhoids. we're really trying to compact it. So my suggestion is, if you're playing Captain's Log in respect to the tactical campaign, that no matter what your character, it doesn't have to be a captain, whatever your character has to do, you kind of create some rules where, okay, they're not going to go off planet, or they're not going to solve the war at this point. Their mission is constricted to something that will affect the level with, like you say, like a progression point or a campaign point, right? Does that make sense that you would kind of constrain your captain's log to those kind of rules?
Yeah, I think you could totally do that. In fact, just listening to you, Michael, I just thought of two more tables that we can add to Captain's Log someday, whether it's continuing mission or maybe some, yeah, I don't know, some future product if we ever make it happen. But we should add somehow, some way, a genre table. So like this episode is going to be horror. It's going to be drama. It's going to be psychological thriller. It's going to be romance. Just to give you a little something to think about how to flavor it. And then the other one is 20 ideas for a bottle episode. So you like the bottle episode being the self-contained on a ship or on a space station or whatever, you're not going off all over the place. You're saving the money on your production and doing it on the ship on the same set. So you're not going off to the cave of the week or the planet of the week or whatever.
Can we talk about that person? Cause I'm loving this and I need to hear more about this. So let's talk about let's all go around and do one bottle episode. Okay. I'm going to go last cause I need to get the concept. So Jim, Al, and then I'll go, what does a bottle episode look like?
A bottle episode would be something like a holodeck episode or the episode Remember Me with Crusher, where everything happened pretty much on the bridge and engineering. And like you didn't go to a planet, you didn't go to a different set. It was just like self-contained, slow, low budget effects kind of thing. Everything happened, like it's, you know, throw characters into a room and see what happens for the most part.
Yeah, and additionally, like it is a cost cutting thing for most shows, but like, you know, there's not a lot of wild camera tricks or anything like that, right? You know, it is. I think a lot of episodes of Deep Space Nine are bottle episodes that just happen on the station, right? How Deep Space Nine came up with so many cool stories in the first season and a half, two seasons before really opening it up is amazing, because they're really almost always on the station.
Okay, got it. Okay, so I think of one, I think about Voyager, Star Trek Voyager, Body and Soul, where Seven ended up being, she had to protect the doctor by putting it into her program. And so she was controlled by the doctor. And it was all happened pretty much on the runabout. And they were eating cake most of the episode. That's how I remember about it. But one of my favorite episodes, they both acted. That's where you saw Jeri Ryan as the actor, right? Okay, so that would be one episode that maybe has some sort of effect on the greater campaign. So that's a bottle episode. So basically you're saying it's like one stage play, one stage, one setting.
Basically, yeah.
Right. And they don't have to build anything new for the scenes, right? They're using the stages that are already built, set up on the grounds. They're not going anywhere special. They're not going on location. It is just, you know,
this is staging. This is my challenge. I'm putting a challenge out there to the Continuing Conversations universe. I want people to send into Continuing Missions episodes you've played in one scene. Like one location, I should say. Multiple scenes, but maybe one location. I think if you want an episode like that, a module to pick up, which is the model of that, is Michael Duxbury's Ghost Rider. One of my favorites and most epic games you ever played is definitely what you would consider a bottle episode then, I think, in that case.
Yeah, I would agree. It was all contained right on in that house when I ran it with my players as well. So, you know, we had a couple of other people arriving, but for the most part, it was all right there in that house. And we filled 2.5 hours of playtime very quickly with just discussion.
Jim, I want to let you know, I'm going to pitch you. I aspire to write some modules that are bottle episodes in the future. And that's going to be my personal challenge. I will be pitching you some bottle episodes for people, because if I can achieve that, I think I'm a good writer at that point.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't think you have to worry about that, but sure, whatever. I think you're both fine writers. So you don't have anything to worry about in that respect.
Yeah, but what a challenge. You know, I'm sorry, I'm going to digress. I'm going to give a non-Star Trek bottle episode of what I think is writing at its ultimate craftsmanship when it comes to movies, 12 Angry Men. The entire thing happens in the jury room, and this is a 1960s movie. And if you haven't seen it, I don't see how you could ever learn how to write a bottle episode. this is the ultimate bottle episode to me. Would that be right on target, Jim, of what you're thinking?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we could go down that rabbit hole all night long. I would argue that 1776 is a bottle episode, right? That's Congress in one room for 2.5 hours singing and talking, right? And trying to hammer out what are we going to do about the British, yeah. And are we going to declare independence or not? That's a lot of back and forth. I mean, stage plays are a great place to go for bottle episodes. I think you would be well worth your time to go find some stage plays.
That's true. What's the Atticus Finch one? I just forgot the name of it. That's a great...
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Another great bottle episode, right?
Yeah.
One scene.
And then on point for Star Trek, I think one of the better examples that I can think of is Duet, DS9, Kira and Maritza, in Odo's prison cell, just going back and forth. Great, great writing.
That's Captain's Log. To me, that's Captain's Log at its best. And if people really want to know, like, Al and I were talking today about how somebody, and I was really flattered, and I'm going to be giving my shout outs to them later. I will do that. But their very first experience in TTRPG was Captain's Log. They just told us today on social media. And that to me just was like, I almost cried. I was like, what? This is your first, leap into it? I thought that was so cool.
There's somebody on the Discord whose first exposure to RPGs is Captain's Log, and their handwriting there.
Yes, exactly.
So then I was like, what? People still handwrite? This is awesome. It's so cool. It's amazing. It's amazing what we've done with this. It's mind-boggling and humbling.
So one thing I do want to point out, though, is if you decide to do a combined Captain's Log with the tactical campaign overlay, how do we make adjustments? Because tactical campaign overlay is written as though you can have up to 5 dice, right? And when you're playing Captain's Log, you might only have 2 dice with you. So how do we make those type of adjustments? And I've got a blog coming out that talks about it a little bit. But essentially, what you do is, the difficulty of your point of interest just becomes that's how many hits you need to get to overcome the point of interest.
Brilliant.
Straightforward.
Brilliant. And I really love that. Al, you gave me a preview of that blog. And one of the things I'll have to stress, I know Jim and I have talked about it when we talked about Captain's Log before, is you could adjust that hit table to success in Captain's Log. It doesn't have to be 3. It doesn't have to be 3 plus ship skill, or it doesn't have to be ship skill plus 2. If you're having a social conflict, you can say, you know what? You got to get 8 successes. That's your scale on this one. And wrap your story. Like 12 Angry Men, going back to that, would have been like 20 successes you need to get through that episode of arguing your point. So thank you for saying that. Me and Jim always stress, the game's completely adaptable and flexible for whatever makes your best story.
And on that point, Michael, I'm gonna put the brakes on here for just a second and kind of get you two to talk about this a little bit. We talked a lot in this episode and in other episodes about how flexible the system is, how flexible Captain's Log is, how flexible the tactical campaign is, how flexible Star Trek Adventures is, and how many ways you can bend and spin and mutilate this to your own desires. What's your advice to game masters and players who need more guardrails, who don't have that experience and flexibility to say, I can do whatever I want, but I need guardrails. I need more solid rules, right? Like they look at Star Trek Adventures compared to something like, Pathfinder or D&D, where things are very prescriptive, right? Not to say that's bad, but like very specific rules, as opposed to like, do what you want. We got a million tools. Use the tools that you want to use. Like, what's your advice to those game masters and players to dial it in a bit?
It's funny that Al and I were talking about this before we started recording today, Jim. And I'm trying to really be well-spoken in how I express what I'm about to express. We've been talking a lot about 2E coming out, right? And the only word I'm going to say about it is streamlined, based off of years of experience of people playing it and suggestions and fan suggestions and homegrown rules that were like, these are ways to streamline it if you need to. But in my opinion, if I really was that kind of person you described, 1E would hit it for me. I would really want to learn the game and learn the beats of how Star Trek builds stories through 1E. And you got a little bit more detail which I'm not going to go into detail with, but 1E was solid for that, capturing the feel of Star Trek scenes. Everything else from the Federation Klingon War tactical campaign to Captain's Log to 2E, I'll say streamlined of that. That matches the thinking of many of our modern players. But if I really was a nervous GM and I wanted to, I hate to use quotations, get it right, 1E is a solid system. It's a great system. It was well thought out, you know, my opinion.
I would say that the easiest way would be to interact online and ask, because this community that we have inevitably will have an answer within minutes of you posting something online on suggestions on how to do it or how to try. I would always say use what's provided for you first. Make sure that you have that down to a science before you start tweaking it, right? So there's a lot of people that are saying that they've been trying the tactical overlay themselves, single player, so that they have an understanding of it before they present it to their players, right? And I would say the same thing here. Like if you don't understand the flexibility of the system or you need better help seeing it, try it as it's written. Like word for word, exactly how we did it. Because you know what? We've spent time playtesting this. We've spent time designing this. It's meant for you to follow step by step. Once you feel confident in that step by step process, that's when you can start playing around.
Yeah. And that's where you can start seeing all those 20 odd, 30 odd books that we did for Star Trek Adventures First Edition, plus all those modules. You'll start seeing new and interesting ways that you can start folding them in and combining them with Captain's Log and the tactical campaign and everything else. So,
yeah, I think we've talked about it before, Jim, too. It's like when you play a module, if you're a new GM, don't try to master all the rules at once. Focus on one or two things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Start simple and then just add to taste. You know, I've long argued that just using the basics, this 2d20 to resolve a task, just that. Start with that. Once your players are comfortable with that, add in momentum, add in threat, add in the ability for them to buy more dice, add in the assist mechanics, go from there, you know, start and then build an extended tasks, so on and so forth, and just build from there. I think that progression, that flow is something that it's something I couldn't have discovered until I had years of experience with the system, right? I think right out the gate, it was a little hard to pull all that together from the get-go, but it's taken me some time working with you guys too, just learning, oh, look, there's a progression here, right? And you can go bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, or more and more and more, or you can just find how many mechanics do you need for your group to be happy and to be successfully running Star Trek Adventures, and then stop, right? Maybe test it once in a while and add more, or don't. And that's the same thing with the tactical campaign. You know, start with like I was saying, as written, and then start playing with it. Maybe you want to do one thing one way, you want to do something a little different, and you can just, you know, it's super flexible, and you're not going to break
it. Yeah, by the time this episode airs, I'm going to check it real quick because I want to make sure I'm right about it. This episode that we're talking about right now, which is combining CL with Captain's Log with Star Trek Adventures and Klingon War, is going to air on 5/10, May 10th. I'm going to be at the D8 Summit in Chicago, outside of Chicago. And one of the things I'm doing there at the end of April, which is going to be an interesting test, is I'm playing the Klingon Federation War campaign. So picture me at a table. I've allowed four players to join me as admirals. I hope they dress up. If you signed up for my game, I've seen some of you already have dress up as an admiral. I'll buy you cookies or something. No, whatever you want, whatever refreshment you want at the bar. If you dress up as an admiral, I got you. So I picture us, Jim, because I get 4-hour slots for these games, right? So I'm going to have everyone sitting around the table. You know, they got their admirals. We go ahead and run one or two rounds just to get them hints about all the points of interest. That's going to be like the first 2 hours. I want the last 2 hours to say, okay, in order for us to get to the next phase, which we're not actually going to have time to finish, we got to go play this mission brief. And I'm going to hand them all their players and be like, in order for us to win this war, you've got to now succeed at this mission. This is Kirk level undiscovered country crap, right? So I'm only going to play one or two acts because it's only 2 hours, but I'm going to take it next to group level. And I'm really curious to see how this pans out in a convention, because Al, correct me if I'm wrong, this might be one of the first times we're doing convention play with Federation Klingon War Campaign, right, in April?
It should be the first one, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, and I'll be taping as much as I can. You know, I want to make an episode of it. But Jim, I'm kind of curious to see how we get that. I'm hoping that from that, the players get the feeling like, wow, we were here and then we felt the pain of a single soldier.
Oh, I can't. I hope you find a way to record as much of it as you can, because I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe encourage them, if you don't have someone to play with going home, pick up a copy of Captain's Log. And you can continue your character's adventures on your own under this universe that we created on that day, right? So show them the different levels that way. Al was unmuted, so I figured he wanted to talk.
So the one thing that I do want to just throw in here, because I know that we're probably getting towards the wind down time, is these two books have some pretty revolutionary systems in them. And while we designed them specifically to be Trekkie, they can absolutely be picked up and moved and used for other games as well. You just change the tables, and these are very versatile systems in such a way that if you wanted to apply a war to a Marvel Comics game, you could use the structure of the tactical campaign to do that. You know, if you want to tell a first person story of Peter Parker, you could use the basic structure of Captain's Log to do that. So I think that these two books as role playing tools and aids is something that shouldn't be overlooked.
Oh my God, you just made me fall in love with the idea of doing a Peter Parker level tactical campaign. Like, imagine if one of the character assets is Kid on Bike, and Kid on Bike knows where like the hoodlums are all hiding, and that's the asset. Oh my God, that would be so cute if Kid on Bike was like a character asset.
And the two places I naturally went to was Star Wars. Using Captain's Log to tell a personal story about a Jedi Knight or a rebel trooper or something else, and then going into the tactical campaign and doing, you know, okay, this sector of space is now under attack. You've got X-wings and Y-wings on the asset table, and they're fighting the things. But the other place you could go is any number of fantasy RPGs. I'm thinking Lord of the Rings, right? Lord of the Rings. You got no shortage of characters that can be on your asset table. You'd have to do something different with the ships. Maybe just make it characters or units, right? Maybe units, like the left wing of the Rohirrim or something. A Lord of the Rings war campaign using the tactical campaign rules would be pretty sweet.
And you know, I got to take it to the next level. Jane Austen tactical campaign. Never mind.
Well,
I could do it. The church would be one of the like large assets, you know, instead of a ship, use the church, or you use, you know, a rectory.
Or I've been thinking for a long time, Michael, about doing like a Captain's Log playthrough of sentience when your robot gains sentience.
Yeah.
Right. And what do they experience as they're starting to get their motions and things like that? So like I just the systems that were developed for these two books are just fantastic and can be used just about anywhere.
Michael, what's the main character in the Jane Austen novel? It's one of the young women who's looking for a Or
I'd have to ask the wife. Literally every time she's playing, she loves Jane Austen. Every time I walk into the room, I'm like, oh look, they're dancing. Oh no, they're talking. Oh look, they're sipping tea. Oh look, they're dancing. Oh look, they're talking. Oh look, they're sipping tea.
Right. Well, so there's your tactical campaign, right? So instead of the stakes of the tactical campaign being a war, the stakes are winning the hand of this person in marriage.
Social conflict. Stakes, oh, right? It's all social. Conflict.
Yeah. So your 2d20, your random tables then is one is a list of suitors who are vying for the attentions of this person. Mm-hmm. And then you got the next table is all the different things that you can be involved in. You have to go to socials, you have to go to the right. opera, you have to go to the tea, you have to go to an afternoon tea, you have to go to church, you have to do all these yeah. things.
I like right? the events that would possibly be negative is like you walk out of the bathroom with toilet paper on your shoe. Negative event.
So you're still playing through the phases and you're still playing through all the tactical stuff, but like the stakes are different, right? You're just changing yeah. the stakes. Instead of it being a global war or galactic war, it's winning the hand of Lady Mary or whatever her name was.
Is there a Jane Austen RPG? Because I have a feeling me and you, Jim, should write this baby now.
I'm willing to bet there's one on itch.io somewhere.
No, but I think Modiphius needs to produce this. We need to talk offline.
I don't know about that, but
if you guys want a Jane Austen RPG, you tell us, we'll get it out for you.
I bet we can do it as one of those micro, like 2-page RPGs. Because like you said, it's all social. It's all social conflict.
It's all social.
But then we'll add the tattoo campaign on top of it.
Hey, Dune is so, I'm telling you, Dune is more like Jane Austen than it is like Star Trek. The way they settle the social conflict and then eventually get stabbed in the neck with something, you know, it's really weird. This I love Dune. So Al, what are you thinking? You look exasperated.
No, I just think that like the 2d20 games especially could easily adapt. Like you mentioned Dune, a solo game in Dune would be spectacular, right? Or think about the tactical campaign being applied to something like Octoom, which is told during a war, like, you know, things like that. I just think that these systems have a lot of oomph and could hopefully go places.
Good point, man. This is amazing. So we did tonight, we wanted to really show you, you know, some people are like, well, should I pick this up or pick that up? Whatever you pick up, it's all integratable. That's the way it's been purposely designed. Thank you, Nathan Dowdell. Thank you, Al Spader. Thank you, Jim Johnson, for all of this configuration, because one of the things we always think is if a new product comes out, we don't want it to alienate any other products. This is Star Trek. We don't alienate anyone, right? IDIC. So I think the design of that is very purposeful, and hopefully this builds people confidence in playing the different levels that are available out there for gameplay. Let's a couple maybe final last words, and then we'll head to gratitude. Al, then Jim.
I think that like one thing to think about or that I think about is just how special it was to be a part of this project. And Michael, it was awesome when I heard that you were taking on Captain's Log. I'm like, he is the perfect person to be doing this. And so like Jim, I can't thank you enough for having us on board and giving us the opportunity to kind of push the boundaries of what a role-playing game can do or can be. And so, you know, I just think that it's a very special thing when to like as kind of like our swan song for first edition to, you know, send off first edition with a very flexible system that can be used across lines, you know, across books, across campaigns, you know, as players see fit. And I'm super excited that I got to be a part of it.
That sounded like gratitude. So I'm going to take that as gratitude. And I always like letting Jim finish. So I'll go next. But I got to actually say for people, you're going to see this later on once 2E comes out, how the Federation Klingon book is actually perfect bridge. It'll work with both systems wonderfully. You're going to see that, which I think is super cool. My thank you before we end with Jim is going to go out to Grace. Grace is the one I mentioned earlier. And I'm just going to read what she went ahead and wrote to me today. She says, I would love to have it. She wants, I want her to post what she wrote about playing Captain's Log. She says, "I'm just loving Captain's Log. I'm a lifelong Trekkie and video RPG player. Coming to TTRPG has been interesting. Wrapping my head around the core concept of theater of the mind has probably my biggest struggle. The book, the community, and online resources have been such a great help. I'm going through the Academy mission brief that's written by Michael Duxbury as a life path campaign. So this is solo RPG. Felt like the perfect tutorial. Anyways, TTRPG is just something I do now, and I'm excited to explore it all. Please tell me there is a solo rule book for Fallout in the works." I don't know about that. But Grace, welcome to the club. And one last thing Grace added here is that she's from Ontario, completely new to TTRPGs, and in all my adventures, Trip lives. Yes, that's what you can do with TTRPG, is you can make whatever universe you want. Grace, we love you. Keep it coming. We love to post whatever you have on continuing missions, but you're the reason why we do what we do. You make our day. All right, Jim.
Oh man, how do I follow that? That's so good. Oh, Grace, you are just in store for so much joy and fun of gaming for a long time to come. I mean, even after STA, you know, you got no shortage of Star Trek and stuff ahead of you, plus your own creativity and your imagination, you'll be just fine. But do share everything that you create, because we love seeing that stuff. So keep it coming. What are we doing? Final thoughts and gratitude?
Yeah.
Final thoughts. I think new players coming into Star Trek Adventures probably don't realize the wealth of material waiting for them to discover. And I think, you know, pace yourself, right? Because you're enjoying a game line that's 7 years old. And it's not just a game line that's been throwing supplements at you and new adventures and new material. It's like Captain's Log and the Statsil campaign, like Al was saying, are significant mechanical things that have expanded the scope of the game when it came out 7 years ago in ways that we could not have imagined 7 years ago, but just through the process of development and growth and collaborative, you know, idic teamwork on the entire Star Trek Adventures team, plus all the fans, because like the fan feedback has influenced that certainly over the years. But just, you know, listening to this episode, right? Like, you can see how you can scale it way high. And you can bring it way down. You can do multiple players, one player. Like, there's just so many directions you can go with this. It's just as expansive as the Star Trek universe. And I am humbled and thrilled to be part of it every day. And I am thrilled and humbled that Michael and Al and all the other folks have come along with me for the ride. And just because we're talking about specifically Captain's Log and the Statsil campaign, yeah, I'll switch over to gratitude and say I don't know that I've told you to this often enough, but I'm grateful for both of you for stepping up and doing all the hard work that you did, all the amazing hard work that you did. Because at the time I had, you know, these two books and Utopia Planitia and Lower Decks to manage. And I couldn't do all four. I've said it before, I couldn't do all four by myself. And I'm grateful that yeah, as a project manager, you always hope that you hire the right people for the right job. And I got lucky twice. So I'm grateful for that. So thank you both. I am also a very proud acquisitions editor, because I can see the things that you both have done on your own, branching off of what you've been working on in Star Trek. And I've been following both of your respective freelance careers quite avidly. And I'm your biggest champion and your biggest fan, both of you. So I just want you to know that from the bottom of my heart.
Jim, shucks.
I am grateful to be working with you too. And who knows what is ahead of us, but like Picard said, the sky's the limit. So I'll leave it at that. And then finally, I'll say thank you to all the fans. Without the fans, we wouldn't be doing this. We wouldn't have been doing all these cool books and products and stuff. So thank you for supporting the game. Thank you for supporting each other. Thank you for supporting Star Trek. Star Trek is an amazing franchise, and I'm so grateful to be responsible for just one little teeny tiny piece that we're clearly just, you know, based on that story of Grace, we're somehow touching lives and making little bits of it a little bit better. So in this day and age, that's really important. So grateful for that. So thanks, everybody. Really, really love you all. Really appreciate you all.
All right. The conversation continues. It gets better every week. IDIC.
Live long and prosper. Be safe, be well. We'll talk to you all real soon.